Here when we did. Okay, so Shelby, would you mind giving us a quick few sentences about why you were interested in serving on this commission? Because we have, and then Katie is also on Zoom. She was here last week, and Eric is the other one. So they'll introduce themselves. You have to be here for you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Shelby Sharon, and I'm a landscape architect. And I was interested in joining the Historic Commission because I met with Piper maybe a year ago or so. And she was like, oh, you should join the Historic Commission. It's really fun. So that's part of it. She encouraged me. But I have a background in working with historic landscapes. So most of my professional work for the last over 10 years has been working with historic and cultural landscapes throughout the country. So I've worked on historic properties. I've done National Register nominations. I've done cultural landscape reports and master plans for historic places. So that's why I was interested in becoming, you know, involved and getting involved in the city. So here I am. Thanks for having me.
Very glad you come with a lot of good skills.
Thanks.
So glad Piper talked you into it as being fun.
Yeah,
we try. Anyway, I'm Beverly. We talked on the phone, and I don't know. I've been on about 3 years now, and I came as a person that's committed to historic preservation and have no skill sets. maybe running a movement, things like that. So, and this gentleman here, I'll just introduce him and he can introduce himself, is Dale, who was chair for quite a long time, and he always keeps me straight if I get off.
Derek's just going off on his technology when I look at him.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. He's a zoom in.
He is good at it.
I like it.
Okay, so Dale.
So I've been on the Historic Commission about 25 years. I'm a designer, builder, interested in preserving Ashland's history, architectural history.
Yeah. And go ahead, Bill.
So I'm Bill. I've been on the commission 10 years, plus or minus. I'm a residential designer and done a lot of work in the historic districts, and I enjoy working with the commission and we can preserve what we have here in Ashland.
Eric?
Greetings, my name is Eric Benetti. Ashland resident for about 25 years. We have two properties that are within the historic district.
The last time. So, and Katie, maybe you could introduce yourself as well. She's the third new person.
Oh, wow, that's a big, I didn't know it was so big up there. Hey, Shelby, my name's Katie, and I actually am in the market for some historic landscape because I own the E.V. Carter House at Siskiyou and Union. Anyway, I wanted to get on the board because the town has such an amazing culture of history and also is moving forward. And I want to be able to keep both as we attract new young families in town.
Very good. And Derek, can you turn the camera on? Yes, you do. You do that very well.
Derek Severson. I'm a staff liaison for the planning department. And I've been staffing the commission off and on since the early 2000s, but this is my first meeting solo for a while. So.
Yeah, and you're still doing all the high tech.
Yeah, high tech of holding a camera.
Well, I'm old. So,
hi, Shelby. We spoke on the phone. I'm Sean. I'm a Gemini. I'm joking.
I don't think you are.
That is nothing to do with it. Anyway, I am the liaison for the council, and welcome aboard.
Absolutely.
Hi, Shelby. Good to see your face. Hope to see you soon. You know me, Piper. Historic Commission is fun. Yay.
Yeah. Well, people are getting in the spirit.
I don't know if it's that much fun. I'm Sam. I've been on the commission 20 or 21 years. I've had a passion for historic architecture. I live in a National Register home, and it's just something I've been passionate about all my life.
And you're a Pisces.
So
TMI. Yeah,
Terry's in there.
Terry?
Yeah.
Oh, Terry, can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm afraid to talk. My internet might go out again, but I'm glad to at least be here on Zoom. I've been on the commission since '89, I'm a photographer and historian. I'm still dealing at home, and I'm not strong enough to be there, but welcome, and it's good to see all of you, so I'll keep my fingers crossed that the internet's working. It was working strongly, and then it cut out right when it started the meeting, yeah. Anyway, good to see all of you.
Yeah, and we're grateful to have Terry's participation, because he is the sort of resident historian, and all the photographs that so many of the photographs that we have in the survey of properties are his. So we're glad to have you. Hope you can stay connected tonight. And then I have the challenge of reading the land acknowledgement, which is always a little stressful for these names of the native tribes. So anybody else want to volunteer? No, I thought that was the deal. Okay. We acknowledge and honor the Aboriginal people on whose ancestral homelands we live. The Akir-Kutsum band of the Shasta Nation, including the original past Indigenous inhabitants, as well as the diverse Native communities who make their home here today. We also recognize and acknowledge the Shasta village of Pakaka, where the Crow lights, that is now the Ashland City. I always feel like I should say amen.
That's right.
I promise not to do that. Anyway, the first we look at the agenda. Is there any other additions you want to add?
Oh, Terry.
Hearing none, we'll just stay with what we have. Let's quick, or maybe not so quickly, look at the minutes. And there was quite a bit of information with these minutes. So is there any changes that need to be made? We'll see. I did want to point out, because we're going to talk about this, and Sean was helpful in talking about this last time, was about in the documents attached to the minutes is the council business meeting from October 18, which is all the background on the standing advisory committees, and Derek said you may have some new reporting on that, Sean, from meeting last night or something.
There was a little bit of a new twist, but kind of expected.
Okay. Yeah. So I think that's worth looking at in terms of the overall idea. And then it actually has everyone's names who are on these standing committees. Are there any changes that you see that are necessary for the approval of the agenda?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes.
Is there a second? Thank you.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor, say aye. Okay. And are there, at this point, do we have anybody in a public forum? I don't think so. Yeah, but there's none. We can go to the liaison.
Okay. Perfect. Well, welcome everyone. Monday, Tuesday, a little bit busy. So I guess I'll just start off with the commission discussion. So last night we took up the issue of, again, okay, so there's management advisory committees, which are staff directed, right, through the city manager. And there's standing advisory committees, which are appointed, the traditional ad hoc committees, okay, which are appointed by the mayor, confirmed by the council.
Include this commission. Is a correct. Standing.
Right. So that, so advisory standing committee, right. So okay. Last night we took another kind of look at a couple of those committees, one on the MAC side, which was the transportation committee, which is super important. Mm-hmm. Coming up, we have the transportation overlook. What, I'm forgetting the word.
The TME.
Yes.
Transportation something.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. You know, pretty big deal. Well, we're going to essentially take a look at updating our transportation
system plan.
Yeah.
Transportation system plan.
TME. There you go. Thank you.
What is
I don't know why I had this. Yeah. Transportation system plan.
TSP.
Yeah, so yes. it's a pretty big deal, and the reason why it was delayed a little bit was because of funding. Previous city manager, the interim, actually found grant funding for it, which was pretty substantial. It's like $300,000. It's a lot of money.
Oh,
yeah. So it was delayed so we're at this this point where the Transportation Commission is going to take this up. I actually spoke to it and said I thought it was super important that. Not less transparency, but something like this would demand more transparency. And therefore, it really wasn't applicable to me in an MAC, a management advisory commission, where there's no records reporting or anything.
Yeah.
I said, hey, I mean, this is something that if it's so important, it should be out, you know, that we have, you know, trackable, accountable kind of direction on what the course of action is. So long story short, that's what the conversation predominantly focused around and was approved. So what will be happening going forward is that MAC will be highly elevated, elevated to a standing advisory commission.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So really what I'm getting at is it's a process.
Yes,
right?
It is.
I don't want to say they're fungible, but there will be bumps along the road where some of these things will become really important and more important in the sense that, you know, I think it needs to bring more light and transparency to the fore. So that's kind of where that was. So that was the discussion around.
And did they vote?
Yes, we voted, and it will be coming forward. Yeah.
Oh, good.
So and I imagine, you know, within the next couple meetings we'll get some more direction on who those members will be through the mayor's appointment. It will be confirmed by the city council. So a good step. So that was that. Another thing Derek and Brenda did a lot of good work on was a follow-up on the business development kind of roundtable the council held in May to get some feedback from business owners about what the city can and should be doing in order to facilitate business development, business support, those kind of things. And Brenda did a really good job. And imagine, Derek, you were involved in this too.
Yeah.
With kind of a highlight of you know, steps that we could and should be taking to be a little bit more aggressive in how we can help facilitate these things on the business side. So I really, really liked it. I thought it was a really good stab at the direction we should be going. So I kind of said, hey, you know, I think there's some other issues as far as, you know, we talk about the building process, we talk about permit fees, we talk about SDC fees, and then we talk about miscellaneous fees. So my question is, what the hell is a miscellaneous fee? And what happens if we altered some of those, got rid of some of those, morphed them together? How would that enhance the process? So thinking along that lines. So it was a lot of good dialogue within the council about it. I think, you know, the next steps will be as this process kind of moves forward. And it was a, you know, 15-page document. Yes, that was Brendan on Monday in the study session. So
is there going to be ongoing dialogue with this business group then?
Yeah, I mean, the feedback that we kind of gave council gave Joe, who's the city manager, was, okay, let's take this and let's work on some other things that we need to do, and let's come back to the council at a reasonable time with the next steps forward.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think it was time well spent. The other two things we talked about relevant to this committee would be, one was, how do we support multifamily development? And Scott Flurry gave the presentation about, you know, the steps we can take to enhance, facilitate, fit maybe financially as well, a step in the right direction with making this more palatable to get, you know, multifamily,
so
affordable housing.
Affordable housing, okay.
And one was postponing the funding of permits a little bit. The other thing was maybe lifting or putting in a cap on some of the initial roll-off costs until occupancy actually happened. We're going to take steps A, B, and C. No, that wasn't the conclusion. The conclusion was, this is the first reading. We're going to tweak it a little bit, come back. Scott's going to come back to the council with next steps and how we make this happen. You know, I said from the beginning, I am all for, what do we need to do to develop affordable housing, multifamily housing in our town? Okay. That to me, you know, don't be offended when I say this. To me, the number one crisis facing Ashland is not climate change. Okay. It's climate change is not something we're going to fix. Okay. But we certainly can take a big bite out of affordable housing and moving that forward. So that's kind of the feeling on everyone's on board and what do we need to do to kind of move the ball forward with affordable housing. The other thing was interesting was preserving manufactured home parks. It's come up. We had, and this was on Monday, we had, Tom out of Portland, who had facilitated this process in Portland. We have like 255 units, okay? They have 3,000. So how do they take this mammoth step from growing that within a community that, you know, was a lot of different people, a lot of different wants, wishes, and he kind of laid out for us some ideas on how we can kind of move forward with that. So we have two parks within the urban growth zone that we could bring into the city. There was some suggestions by the mayor to codify some of the regs around how we look at it. So developers can't go in and snatch out away from residents who have, let's say, just hypothetically, right? Say they have $100,000, $150,000 investment, okay? Somebody comes in and wants to develop it, the state will give you $7,000, okay? That's a no-win for the landowner. I mean, the homeowner, it's not, you know, a stable foundation for people. And I think, you know, that was the focus. How do we make it so these people, you know, are not knocked out of their investment,
right,
and, you know, where they live, because, you know, a developer's come in and you know, decided to take it another way. So I thought it was, you know, really an interesting kind of discussion and development in how we develop a process going forward to protect, you know, the manufactured parks. Again, we're just 255.
Was there any discussion about increasing the number of parks?
There was a lot of, no, not in that sense. What do we need to do to do that? That was brought up, though, you know, and it's money, really. It's a huge cost overhead for the real estate, the property. And that was something that Tim Armstrong said. They don't have that land, so that's not something, you know, they have big bustles of land that people say, yeah, you know, I'll buy that. Portland, they don't have that. We could face that. So that'll be something, you know, Dale, that quite honestly, I think we'll have to get our heads around.
Would it be a cheaper alternative than affordable housing?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I thought what the mayor had said about the two parks within the urban growth boundary that we could look at and possibly annex in, I thought was an interesting idea.
What are the two parks?
I don't know them. I don't know the two parks. No.
So there's two parks that are in within the urban growth boundary,
yes,
but are still county land,
yes,
and not in city land.
Yes.
Oh, they're the county land. Those are, the one up by Croson.
Yeah, there's that one. Sure.
You got me.
By,
yeah,
Bear Creek. By the North End Church.
Well, then there's the one by Mobile Madness right there at the corner of Walker and is that our, yeah, that's true. Yeah. So where's the other one that you were thinking?
Down by the North Interchange, by the
Brothers. Right.
Yeah. One on Clay.
There's another one
off of
Iowa too.
One on Clay, that's
Wing Spread,
and that's within the city
limits.
All right.
This is something.
So Ashland has four manufactured home blocks as of November 2020, with a total of, as I said, 255 spaces.
What's the zoning on those?
Well, they're talking about creating a specific zone, but they vary. Like the one behind Remix is zone commercial, even so. You then, with that one, if you try to do something to preserve manufactured housing, you get into issues of takings of commercial development rights. I think typically they're either, you know, like R1 3.5 or some R2 maybe.
What about this stuff in Lower Clay?
Kind of
maybe R2.
Residential area.
So what's the benefit of bringing it into the city?
That's what I was going to
ask. Security.
Because the county doesn't provide them security?
No, it's a good question. I don't really know.
I mean, I think that
other than it's
inventory.
More.
Part of the Portland approach has been to rezone them as manufactured housing only.
Okay.
And if we went that route, we could only do it if it was in the city. We couldn't rezone county land.
Mm-hmm.
So they can zone specifically for.
Well, I mean, there's issues because you're taking away the right to do something they're entitled to do.
Yeah, sure.
So
true.
You, under Oregon law, you have to pay when you take development rights. So.
Oh, okay.
Complicated, it's depending
easy.
On the zoning reason.
It's super easy.
But manufactured housing, do you know, Derek, it must be more economical than build contracting buildings?
You know, I don't know the parks here in town. I mean, I know where a 500 square foot apartment rents for, you know, 1500 plus. Some of the parks in Medford, Central Point, you get a space for 400 or 500 a month.
And then the owner of the manufactured house owns the building, they can move away.
Oh, that's true.
Renting space. Right. I think another big point last night was how do you figure out how people can buy the land?
Yeah.
Public
private partnership. Exactly. That was brought up. Yeah.
It's
coming. Some of the stuff's coming back to me now.
So was this the first reading?
Yes.
Kind of thing.
Okay. So it was initiated by Council Duquesne.
Okay.
And they had Cynthia and a lady by the name of Kathy Callie, who gave her a spiel of how she was, she spent time living in a mobile home park and, you know, what she experienced. And, she's a money coach. So the finances attached to, she's the one that brought up the, you know, it's $150,000 investment. And if the developer comes in and says, okay, I want you out, the state will give you $7,000.
Yeah,
and say, hey, have a good day. You know, I was like, well, wait a minute, everyone loses. So, you know, I thought that was some interesting, you know, the economics behind it,
yeah.
I thought was kind of interesting. So anyway, that's in a nutshell.
But it also helps the whole conversation for affordable housing to look at other options.
Like I said, I think affordable housing is something that we can actually, we've been talking about it in the city for 30 years.
Oh.
And when I got this involved in this whole politics thing, you know, that was one of the things that always came up, affordable housing, affordable housing. So I really, before my term's over, I want to say, you know, we accomplished something in that area. And I think there's a real willingness to figure it out. So I'm excited about it.
That's
it'll be
great.
I'm glad to see some movement.
Yes.
I think everyone
now's
is.
Now's a good time to say amen there.
That's a hallelujah moment.
That's a hallelujah.
But let's not count any chickens until they pass.
No,
right? So.
But now I wanted to ask in general, when you're looking at affordable housing, when you talked about Scott Flory making the presentation, for multifamily. Does the planning office work with him then? How does
multifamily? You mean,
yeah. Okay. So the reason Scott Florey was the person talking about it is the issue was how to deal with system development charges, which those are a charge that's associated with the building permit, but it doesn't actually come to the planning department or the building department. It goes to public works because it's to pay for future infrastructure.
Yeah.
But we really didn't discuss the SDC fees per se. We discussed how to facilitate around policy, you know, around facilitating the caps or the occupancy or when the financing
can. Yeah, whether you pay in order to get your building permit or occupancy or sometime after.
Well, it always strikes me that there has to be a lot of coordination between the building department, public works, and you guys.
Yeah.
You all get along, I guess.
Yeah.
So far.
And then whoever's going to step up and pay to put in the infrastructure.
Whoever
steps up to develop the property.
Developer, I mean, that's
the big one.
Yeah, totally.
That's the bigger one.
Yeah.
So if you buy a piece of property that's $1 million, you're going to be at least in that number again for infrastructure.
Well, this is just because I don't know a lot about the business of development, but when the interest rates are so high, is that not an inhibitor to promoting development?
You bet it
does. Going out to dinner is an inhibitor.
I mean, really. So that's always the reality. I don't know what's going to happen. We're going to have an election. We'll find out. Everybody thinks the next.
I would like to just ask if the folks on Zoom, are you able to hear us?
Yeah, that was what I was going to ask too.
It's okay.
Oh, good.
And are you missing the faces? Is it as if we weren't like you?
I actually only see you and Beverly. Oh, there we go.
So we can have that on a rotating basis.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Just like,
rotating. Like a fan.
I'll do that next time. I appreciate you asking that because. Please feel free to participate, even though you are in the box on the TV.
Thank you for allowing and making this happen, too, by the way.
What's that?
Thank you for allowing this to happen. I'm in Florida, so this is great.
Oh, wow. Very good.
It's 82 here.
Oh, today. So Derek is the one who makes all this work. So any more that you want to talk about, Sean, or we can move on to the
exit
stage left.
Let's see. I passed out CLG, that workshop coming up on the 16th. That's the draft agenda.
Oh, that's great.
And I'll email that around as well because it has a link if you're interested in registering. It's from 1 to 6:30 via Zoom on the 16th.
Would you give some background on, because I remember being new and not knowing what a CLG was, and this is related to the state.
Sure. So the CLG is the Certified Local Government Program through the State Historic Preservation Office in Salem. They certify that local governments are doing what's required to preserve historic properties, recognize and preserve historic properties in the city. They provide grant funding and support for cities to do training, prepare materials like that brochure that you showed. Sometimes to look at updating our codes, they'll give us grant funds to hire a consultant to do code updates. And they also do annual trainings like this where various topics as well as awards for preservation. So this is just one of the many things the State Historic Preservation does to promote preservation in the state.
I think this is their annual meeting.
Yeah, I think it's their annual meeting. And, typically they would have these in a historic downtown somewhere and you'd meet in person. But I think they still haven't gotten back to in-person meetings since COVID. So.
And a city has to apply to be designated as a certified local government.
Yes,
right?
City has to apply, and then the city has to be audited every year to make sure that we're adequately managing the program.
Okay, because that's what we have just had.
And
July.
They'll look at things like making sure that an adequate percentage of commission members have a background somehow tied to preservation and architecture or whatever. So
yes.
Yeah, they they are overseeing to make sure that that preservation is being looked out for. And in some sense, that's helped them because the state does less than in, you know, a historic property wants to do some changes rather than the state having to have a commission to review everything statewide. They can rely on local commissions that they've certified.
Go ahead.
We used to have funds to be able to attend meetings.
Yeah.
Now, where did we get those funds? Were they COG funds or did we some sort of council stipend or something?
There in the past have been funds in the budget for training and travel. I would have to check with Brandon to see where we stand, although with Zoom, it's free. So,
yeah, yeah. Staying in historic, and they also have, you know, it's really like a 2 or 3 day thing. And they have,
yeah.
Tours
that are
we've talked about that before, I think, when you were sharing about trying to get some funding, which we could, I guess you could get a grant too.
Yeah.
To
yeah, I think
they're acquainted because like they're doing right now, they're getting input from historic commissions about the 2024 master plan.
Yeah.
24 for yeah, from the whole state. And so I just think it helps us to be more engaged with those state level entities. So
I found it to be very valuable.
Yeah.
I went 6-8 years ago now. Very valuable.
Yeah. I've always found them to be helpful.
There is a waiting room, actually.
So anybody can, I registered. And, I mean, I think it's something to take advantage of. Okay, thank you for providing that information.
No, I think the only other thing is that just to let you know, because Beverly and I have talked about trying to keep you more updated on the actions that you hear. For the co-op action last month, staff did approve that. We've sent notices on it. I'd have to look, but I think it's through the noticing process now. So it's been approved.
And the planning commission.
That's a staff decision.
Oh,
so
staff
yeah, there's decision. Two sorts of decisions,
oh,
staff decisions that you're advising the planning director, which is Brandon now. And he's reviewing it in terms of criteria and then the historic commission recommendations as they relate to the site review criteria and the historic district standards. And then the same thing, but planning commission on what are called type 2 applications.
Yeah.
The planning commission would hold a hearing then and do that.
And are there projects that we've made recommendations on that are under appeal?
There is one, 165 Water Street, 165. The one project for Gil Livni.
Yeah.
That was appealed. The appellants had asked to have that appeal postponed. And I'm looking at the 120-day rule at the state right now and looking at when we can schedule that at council. So I'll know probably later this week when we can get that on the council agenda.
Oh.
But yeah, that's under appeal, but the appeal's been delayed. So typically you wouldn't have an appeal so far from when you heard it. You know, it was appealed and we went through the whole process noticing the appeal and then it was postponed.
Oh. Do you see that as a this year event or next year event?
I was assuming it was going to be next year, but looking at the 120-day rule, there's a state law that says you have to render a decision. And even if the applicant's extended, it can only be extended so far. And then also looking at when we can get it on the council agenda with how full the council agenda is. So I'm hoping that it will go into the new year, but I can't guarantee
it
at this point.
There's so many rules.
Yeah.
But thank you for that, because I think it's good to keep on top of
sure.
Those problems. Anything else?
Nope.
And so that takes us to the planning action. And I think are you Mr. Hoxmeyer?
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, we'll first, I made better notes about how to do the process. First of all, I'm supposed to ask if anyone has any conflict and needs to recuse themselves. That's the first one, right? First question. Anybody? No? Okay. Then we go to the staff report on this.
So you might want to just read it.
I'm supposed to read this.
If you want, I can. I mean, my staff report will not be much more than reading that because it's a, I think, a fairly simple project. So this is a request for site design review approval to add a two-story addition to the existing mixed-use commercial building at 485 A Street. That's the Hoxmeyer building. It was built in 1995 by Mr. Hoxmeyer, and it's non-contributing, non-historic. The addition will be in the same fashion as the existing building. It's going to match the siding, trim, the roof, roofing, eaves. It's also designed to match. And the addition itself contains on the upper level a new bathroom for the existing apartment, and the downstairs is a new commercial kitchen. And I really think that's, again, it's a small addition. I think it says 400 square feet in the notice. I had it at about 503 when I looked at it, but Mr. Hoxmeyer might be able to confirm that. But it's a small addition. It's built by the same person that built the original building, and he's proposing to match design and materials to what's there. So that's really all I have, unless you have questions.
Okay. Does anybody have questions for the staff? Otherwise, we can hear from the applicant. Mr. Hoxmeyer, do you want to join us? You don't have to sit way out there if you don't want to.
Grab a chair. grab the hot seat.
Well, I don't know if any of you remember the place that when it was a grill.
Oh,
I remember crepes and crepes, but then it became a grill. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I want to continue the grill.
Yeah.
But I want the grill to be in a safe place. It wasn't where it was. It's quite dangerous, I thought. So I talked to the fire marshal, and he said, get a permit. So here I am.
Here you are.
This seemed to be the only way to get a permit.
Did you? Well, if you built it in 1995, you probably had to go through that process then, didn't you?
I've had to go through several permits.
Okay. So is there any... It says in the description, too, that safety is one of the primary concerns. And
for the location of the grill.
For the kitchen area, right. And anything else you want to make us aware of?
Well, there was too many flammable things around that corner.
Oh.
For an outdoor grill, unless I put it clear out by the sidewalk or something. So it had to go, I wanted it in that corner.
And so it's on A Street and what's the cross street?
Fourth.
Okay.
And I added a bathroom to the upstairs. I wanted it to be ADA.
Oh, accessible.
Because there were times a couple of years ago where my wife and I considered living up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't able to do stairs.
Oh, okay.
So I knew what it might like to have to live as a wheelchair person. So I wanted that bathroom to be able to accommodate a wheelchair.
That sounds like a good.
And I had to put a roof over that hood anyway. So why not put a bathroom?
Yeah. Because there's an apartment there. Right?
Yes. You put in addition, I remember. Us approving it a few years ago, a small addition on the back, isn't that correct?
That's right. Yeah.
You remember?
Two of them.
Okay. So, I mean, we've seen this project before, but you did very well. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially since everything's the same as you originally built it. Any other questions for Mr. Hoxmeyer? Then we don't. Do we have any public comments? I don't.
Doesn't look like it.
No. So, do you want to point out anything on the
Well, I'm just waxing at the right side there. But canopy, it's over the door, that awning. Mm-hmm. I want to use the same awning that's there now. It doesn't look like that. I just noticed this just now. It'd be in the same spot. It's a little larger.
Is it a canvas awning?
Same one that's there now.
What is it?
What material?
Felt. Canvas?
So, oh, yeah. Canvas yes. Awning.
Okay. That's fine. So,
are you saying use the same awning or
use the same awning?
The same one, okay.
Which is approved at some point.
Right now, the awning is for the upstairs. But I would like to turn the awning, make it look a little more commercial oriented by highlighting the downstairs rather than the upstairs. And the upstairs will lose their deck, so they lose their door.
Does the public use the kitchen area and the grill then?
Who?
The public.
You mean does somebody come in and
use
it?
Yeah, it's just all, because isn't this a yoga center as well?
Right now it is.
Oh.
When the pandemic hit, I thought, there it goes. And for 2 years it was gone.
Oh, really?
So. It's not the same as it used to be.
So it's for private use.
But the intention isn't that the kitchen would be public. It would still be supporting.
The kitchen is going to feed or
support the grill
outside. The outside. Yes, that's the
so sort of the grill will serve the public. That's
yes,
kind of what I was
yes.
asking. Okay.
Yeah, and there's an existing approval for that outdoor use, I believe. I'm not the planner on this one, but I believe we already have had that grill approval in place outdoors for quite a few years.
Okay, very good.
The county was out 2 months ago, and they were fine with everything. But someone was thinking of doing a dent there.
Oh.
So they brought the county to see if she could serve food.
Yeah, right. Okay. Are there any other questions? Before we close the public portion of this meeting, I think I'm doing this right. And then this is the point where we deliberate and close the public hearing. I'm really not good at traffic cop, you know? I just like to go. I just like to go. Well, anyway, so now is the time to close the public hearing and we can have discussion and but no new information, no new conversations with the applicant as I understand it. So is there anybody who wants to open the discussion, has any concerns? Mostly I heard people affirming what was done. This might be an easy one.
I'll say that I think it's a compatible addition and fits the architecture, and I like the symmetry of the end of the building, and I think it's a great addition.
I agree.
Yeah. I agree.
Oh, good. Oh, there we got some voices from the team.
Yes. Jerry.
Yes.
And I agree. I think especially when the materials are the same and it's not an intrusive at all addition. Very nicely done. It's a non-architect. But
I'm hoping that if it could be built in a day, that half the town wouldn't even know anything happened.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, if you can pull that off, that's pretty good. So is there... If people seem satisfied with this, I would say if we can take a motion to approve.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve the.
Know what? We're supposed to not say approve. I just said we're supposed to recommend.
Ooh. Recommend.
Recommend.
Because we don't have the planning commission is the approval. Yes, thank you.
I would make a motion to recommend the addition at 4th and A Street. As proposed.
And I'll second.
Okay.
Terry can second.
Oh, Terry. Oh, good. Terry's still there. So now we have a motion on the floor. Does anybody want to have further discussion, or are you ready to vote?
Fire up the grill.
What's that?
Fire up the grill.
I'll take that as a yes.
Okay, well, that's a pretty good way of getting us moving. So all those in favor of the motion to approve, please say aye.
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 Great. Thank you. Opposed. Okay, so we're moving pretty good. Better than last week time. Thank you very much for coming.
I'm finished here.
You're good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now I know two pipers.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Oh. My niece.
Oh, yeah.
That's the first time I'd heard the name.
Yeah, usually they're about this tall. Not so many adults.
You were ahead of your time.
And they're wearing a kilt.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you
for coming. So now we're looking at the discussion items. And I wanted to just bring up, first of all, it would be helpful to get a date for the retreat. But one of the reasons I think a retreat would be helpful is because this report, like the CLG, did an evaluation. And I think you might have that page, Derek, although you're doing well. Oh, there we go. So if we can, that was in
and
your.
I'll share that so everyone can see it.
That was in.
At least in theory.
Last month's packet. And there's quite here, I've got it in front of me. Under protection of historic property includes code review and whether we still have appropriate protections for designated properties. Those, and the critical one is, are we meeting the state laws? And that precipitated conversation with Derek about some state legislative changes that are going to be really significant on the design standards that we are currently using. So I asked Derek, this is an example of something that needs more discussion in a less, you know, less business, sort of like what you guys do with the study sessions, right? And is that what you're calling?
Yeah, we have beer and pizza. And
yeah, right. I don't think so.
No, it's an hour and a half. It's informal.
Yeah, that's what where we have more time to really discuss it. But I wanted, Derek is very well informed about what's happening that affects historic preservation at the state level.
Yeah, and what Beverly and I talked about isn't what CLG is referring to.
No, that's right.
So there's what's going on right now at the state level. There's a climate friendly and equitable communities rulemaking that just concluded in July. And it is under challenge in court by 10 cities, including Medford. But assuming it moves forward, we'll start having rules come down from the state beginning in January of next year. And first among those is getting rid of cities' ability to mandate parking in within half a mile of transit, which the way Ashland is laid out and our transit route, about 80% of the city property in the city will no longer be able to require any parking, which right now we don't require parking in the downtown, but it will get to the point where we can't require parking at all for anything.
So two off-street parking spaces for single-family residents wouldn't be required?
No parking would be required for anything.
From what boundary?
Within half mile of Route 10. So basically 80%. North Main Street down out Siskiyou and then Ashland Street. It's 79.4% of the tax lots in Ashland fall within that.
But this is driven by the concern.
So this is, this is coming from the emissions. State about climate change. And, you know, 38% of our greenhouse gas emissions are tied to transportation. And so they're thinking that parking and more dense development along transit routes will help that. So the second group of changes that are going to be coming are the cities are going to have to go through a climate friendly area study, which will look at how to accommodate 30% of our population. And the state's envisioning along transit routes, although that's not specific, but 30% of our population in mixed use areas with buildings for a city of our size, at least 50 feet tall, with densities of at least 15 dwelling units per acre. And I think the discussion we'll be having that's going to definitely involve this commission is, do you have a historic downtown with a lot of single story buildings and you bring in a requirement that allows 50 foot tall buildings and also I think has some minimum densities where if you start doing changes, you may have to do a minimum density of residential with it. You're going to be impacting downtown historic buildings. So we got about a 2-year process of looking at those climate friendly areas, where they can be, how big they have to be in order to accommodate that much of the population. And there certainly are some other options besides the downtown to place those. I think if the Croman Mill District moves forward as it seems to be, that's an area that could accommodate a lot of that, as well as Ashwin Street could be looked at in those areas. But
be limited to some zones, though?
It will be establishing climate-friendly areas. Yeah, and the first thing is studying, and we have Rogue Valley Council of Governments will be helping us with the mapping and analysis to identify those areas. And so, then we'll have to analyze them in terms of how they meet all the, you know, once we identify target areas and we run simulations of what the maximum development could be, would it accommodate enough population? And so we'll have an opportunity to run different analyses. And over the course of the next year to year and a half, we'll do that and prepare a study that we give to the state. Then if they accept that study, we'll then have to move forward with actually making code changes the following year.
Oh, man.
So just, I have a question about the first part, the 80% that are within half a month. Is the point of that to create a parking problem and that people then choose?
It's partly greenhouse gas and it's partly housing, because right now, if you look at how much parking is required for development, very often the amount of parking can exceed the square footage of the use and also substantially drive up the cost. I mean, I think like when we did the Hargening parking structure, that's about $66,000 a parking space. So if somebody's trying to build affordable housing and they have to put in parking that costs that much.
That was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Parking makes doing residential extremely difficult.
Just a typical parking lot is $20,000 a spot.
Is that right? For building costs.
Yeah.
So if you do a flat property.
$20,000 a spot just for the infrastructure and the paving and the, you know, all of that.
And so as the codes are written now, you're tacking that on to every single unit, either sales or rentals, to take up the cost of I think anywhere probably from $10,000 to $75,000 per space.
And that's for just a flat, non...
Is that...
No retaining wall.
But if you then develop a piece of property without parking, now you fill it up at a higher density, and now all that parking goes to the street, which it can't accommodate. And is that...
I think that may be part of it, but the state is really saying that the market should make that determination and it shouldn't be the city that's requiring those parking spaces and raising the cost of development, that it should be the market that makes that determination.
If I have an apartment building, there's no parking, nobody wants to rent it, so I'm not going to do that. So I'm going to provide parking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or you're going to charge less rent.
As I said from the beginning, climate change is something we're not going to be able to change, but it's certainly going to impact our life
and
how we deal with it.
It's a huge development.
And how we develop and everything.
Especially, you know, the concern is the planning process is sometimes burdensome. This is adding more, but it's the reality. I'm curious, the litigation that's going on with the 10 cities, what are the issues they are litigating?
A lot of things, and I couldn't really summarize them for you. I mean, I've had meetings with City of Medford and talked about it at length.
Have you?
And I think I just say I don't really buy into some of their arguments, and I probably couldn't adequately explain them.
When's council going to see it?
We'll be starting a public process here shortly, public engagement and analysis.
I'll forward you some information. The
way that they're measuring the half-mile distance to public transportation, is that as the crow flies or is that by a street surface area?
We have the option. I think the way it's measured right now is as the crow flies, because that's just easier to do with mapping rather than having to talk somebody through how they're walking on a street to determine if it applies.
And then hypothetically, they could modify or expand the transit routes between the area too.
Yes, they could. Yeah. And RVT is going to expand.
Yeah.
Like East Main and some other areas. So it's definitely going to have a bigger impact.
So I'm hoping this makes the point that we need a conversation about, like, if we have information on the requirements that the city has to make this study of climate-friendly survey of some sort. And like you have plenty of staff hours for this, right?
I mean, I think it would be good at a retreat to talk about what you all perceive as the impacts that the increased height might have. And if you see ways design standard-wise that we might be able to deal with that.
That's what I'm hoping too. Did you want to say something, Shelly?
I think what Derek was saying, though, too, is that the market's going to determine, you know, you're not going to develop a project of houses or something. You say, you might like it. There's no parking. You can walk a half mile to the bus.
Yeah.
You know, the market's going to dictate. They're going to choose, you know what, I want a place for my bike, my car. We are going to ride share. We are going to have a smaller car. And I might use public transportation, but I can see how it's not practical for a builder to build something without parking. Not for the next 40 years,
right?
Maybe.
Well, that's what puzzles me, and I think we just have to talk about it. But it seems to me there's that the state is pushing the issue to the local level to implement, and so that is a certain burden on the developers and. Just even for more housing.
Yeah.
I think it's commendable to reduce emissions. There's no question. But we also talked about the rulemaking process that I asked about how they would enforce this. And you said they might not even have the regulations done.
Well, I mean, the cities aren't going to have the regulations done.
No.
And it's also questionable what that court action that's underway is going to mean. And also, depending on who's elected as governor, the governor has, Christine Drazen has said that she would like to overturn some of the executive orders of Governor Brown immediately if she is elected.
Yeah.
So that this could all go away if she wins the election. But in the event that it moves forward as it seems to be, the rules basically say that if we haven't adopted changes, we have to implement from state law. So if we have parking requirements in our code, we can't enforce those. Them. We have to enforce what's in the state law.
So the state will trump the cities.
Yeah, that's exactly.
The way it's going to work is they're putting this onto cities. You know, they're pushing more density and less parking. And if you don't like that, you can live in the county. You can have your own garage, horse farm. Yeah. But if you're going to live in a city, it might be more dense.
And I would say that Ashland is not had parking in the downtown required since the 80s. I mean, that's
so weird.
That, for historic districts, that works well because driveways and parking tend to conflict with kind of historic development patterns. So
this is a conversation that I think we could get ahead of and be as an advice in our advisory role about how it would impact our design standards, especially with the height, which is big deal, and understand this. So Derek and I could be working on those issues as well as the ones, like, for example, when it says, going back to this CLG, this is, again, they did an audit or program review, they call it. They they recommend that, let's see, I don't know, that the question was, are the survey and inventory records consistent with SHPO standards? But talking with, I think it was Brandon, our last survey was over 20 years ago. Just like the comprehensive plan, isn't that from the 70s or 80s?
A comprehensive plan, it dates to, in some cases, the 80s, but individual chapters get updated as, you know,
right,
transportation. We've added chapters for regional problem solving, those sorts of things. So, the comprehensive plan, not to sound corny, but it's a living document that we've adopted these and put the books in the shelf and they haven't changed. So and not a lot has changed, but buildings that have been demolished or new buildings that have been built haven't been updated.
And I don't think Jerry's with us to talk about that because and wasn't it also George Kramer?
Yeah, George Kramer that did most of the survey documents.
So now those also have staff implications that we can't do all of that. But I think we could put a pretty good agenda together for a retreat that would be looking also at, you know, how do we want to, if we want to reinstitute the review boards, could we do things differently? You know, just kind of being, it's a reflective process. Usually nobody has, we're more reactive, let's just face it.
Can we talk about what duration?
January is what, I think we were trying to, so that it wouldn't scare people off, go for a half day, something like that in the morning. Because the historic, I think Brandon worked with he told me the the housing advisory committee has done this every January, that they set up some goals, some priorities. And I think it's a good idea to be looking at the big picture and not just looking at every application every month without thinking about the bigger picture. So that's really what I'd like to have an idea of is he's very good at what he does. There's the January schedule. So mostly what would be helpful to know is if you're willing to proceed, what, for example, I know Katie, do you have more dates now in that month? Or are you travel? I can't remember.
We're gone from the 14th to the 31st. But okay. I'm really looking forward to attending.
Well, so if we could do it before in the first 2 weeks of January.
Yeah.
How does that look for everybody else's schedule?
Sorry.
Are you going to be gone?
No, I'm open.
Oh, okay.
I'll be later on in February.
I'll be here. And what about you, Derek? Are you having...
We depend on the day and time. And also whether we can get a space. So.
Okay. Usually, is it a weekday? I don't even know.
I would...
prefer that, I'll bet.
You're probably better off in here and for staffing levels, probably better doing it on a weekday and probably... My guess is your best times may be on Fridays.
Fridays? Is there anybody that has a conflict on either? I lost. This feels like I say I'm right. I think it's the... So maybe the 6th or the
6th would be great.
6th would be great. And Shelby, would that work for you?
Yeah, that would work for me too.
It would be better than Friday night.
Are you looking at, what are you looking at, Derek? Is that this building?
That is my calendar, Brandon's calendar in this room.
That's amazing. It's amazing that you can do that.
And it looks, like the 6th right now is open.
I think we should go for it. if everybody's willing.
In what part of the day is the day?
I always think people are better in the party. Gets tired after noon. So I'm thinking like, what time, starting at 9:30 or 10, go to 1, something like that.
Sure.
We'll just, we'll see how it goes. If we run out of time, then we'll know we have more work to do. But otherwise, it's better to start where you don't like just really want to avoid going to a retreat. I mean, people do. But I think this, especially if we get data to you on these new legislative things, is pretty significant. Especially when I found out that they can enforce it.
Are we getting ahead of ourselves in terms of that, really?
A little bit. I mean, I think it would be a good idea to have an idea of what's coming and talk about it maybe, but there's going to be a, like I said, a 6 to 12 month process of looking at those areas, analyzing them, and talking to stakeholders, which will include this commission. But so
the other things are related to this, the program, the CLG, how we're supposed to be providing training and how to apply historic preservation standards, educate people. So there's a way we can, again, be more intentional in our functioning. That's kind of what I'm proposing. So if everybody is okay with the January 6th, what time do you think? Put a time out there that sounds good.
9:30
till 12:30, something like that.
3 hours.
3 hours.
That's great.
Okay, that's great that we got. I'm amazed.
Okay, so Derek, I have another question for you. So along these lines of legislation coming down from the state, the one with the ability to build an ADU on your parcel without a permit. What's the status of that right now?
So
now, did everybody hear that? Your voice is a little bit quiet because it's a good question.
Leading towards Derek.
Yeah. So there's a House bill that passed a while back that allows you to build an accessory residential unit without going through the planning process.
Oh, that's right.
And it does not require parking. It doesn't allow the city to require anything more than single family residential standards. So no site review, no planning application. Accessory units are approved just with a building permit.
And that's what
and
we found out.
That's in place now. That also applies to duplexes, although duplexes and the difference really being the size of the unit relating to the size of the main house. But duplexes, sort of the same process, except they have to demonstrate that they have two parking spaces on site, which will change shortly. But yeah, so those have, both of those things have taken effect for accessory units and duplexes.
And you have more than one?
You can have up to two units on a on a single family's own property. So any single family's own property can really build an accessory unit or a duplex.
So it becomes a duplex.
Yeah, it's essentially gotten rid of single family zoning.
So a duplex on a single tax lot.
It would be a duplex on a single tax lot, although
you can carve it off though now too, right?
Yeah, there are middle housing land division options that are in the state law now. They're a little bit iffy because they've made it not a land use decision, but they've said the city can require frontage improvements and right-of-way dedication that we don't typically require of accessory units. So somebody builds an accessory unit, wants to carve it off, and under the state law, to do that, they have to add, you know, dedicate right-of-way and build a sidewalk. So
right-of-way is already there, the sidewalk's already there.
Yeah, if the right-of-way was already there and the sidewalk was already there, it'd be fine, but that's a rare occasion.
Means not having a 500 or 700 square foot lot.
There's no minimum lot
size. Yeah, there's no minimum lot size. You can carve it off, but it's not a, it's part of the parent parcel still. So lot coverage and setbacks and all of those things relate to the parent parcel and the original approval. So you have an accessory unit that doesn't have to front on a street, that doesn't have to have parking on the lot, all those things. But you can sell it, but it's
And that's affordable housing.
Yeah. Right? Well, in theory, it's affordable housing.
Why do you say in theory?
Because
that's where it started in California.
I mean, that's where everything that we tend to do and say it's going to be more affordable because it's small. So we adopt a cottage housing ordinance and you build 700 square foot units three times as dense on single family property. And then the 700 square foot units are selling for 480,000 plus their homeowners association dues.
Oh,
so, I mean, I think it's hard in the current market to say something's going to be affordable unless it's deed restricted as affordable, because the idea of smaller being affordable.
It's expensive. Interesting. Yeah. Affordable has got a misnomer too, because it has no bearing on the cost of materials
right.
and labor and everything else. And those are all inflated right now.
Yeah.
So you can't build it affordably because.
Yeah, I mean, that's.
250 a square foot is probably the entry level price right now.
Yeah.
That's is it really? But because I remember you'd ask why we weren't looking at it, and I wasn't aware that this law is.
The short story is that this committee won't have any bearing or effect on those buildings. It's all. No.
That's what we learned.
Yeah. I mean, those are.
That law was also passed this last.
That was passed 2 years ago, I think.
Oh.
I mean, so that's been in effect for a while.
Okay.
Have you seen an influx of those permits?
We have seen one duplex in the last 2 years since that took effect, and that's only going from a single family to two units, so one additional unit. And ARUs, we typically saw 13 a year, and when that code changed, we saw 15. But at that same time, residential single family dropped off substantially and accessory units went up just a hair.
Just that people were aware of it.
Yeah.
The processing easier.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that conversation. I think it's a lot to keep track of.
So would that be also, that discussion also be part of our meeting?
Oh.
I mean, it'd be nice to understand that.
The ADU part. I think so too.
Pretty major change. If we're not looking at it, would the historic look at the building permit and make a comment or not anymore?
I think if we got back to doing review board, you'd have the same advisory comments that you do on any permits within the district.
But it's usually on the building permit, which is already designed and already.
Yeah, it's advisory comments, and staff are probably making similar comments to applicants if we're reviewing those building permits. But it doesn't have any effect on a requirement.
Really,
yeah.
So the review board So it does change what the review board is looking at. So
it would be an exercise in
utility.
Right. Well, you do get the opportunity with the review board to explain preservation to people. So,
after the fact.
Yeah. And you also, as you all know, a lot of times people that are wanting to build in the district are coming to the historic review board and wanting to discuss what they want to do and how to meet standards. So, right. There would still be that benefit when the review board.
That's what I think is building in a place where we are seen as helpful and not.
Yeah.
A deterrent to what people want to accomplish.
Yeah.
And would staff be necessary if it's only advisory?
It's to have the review board functioning, we would have to have adequate staffing because, first of all, the building has to be open, which it's not open to the public very much at all right now.
Right.
Second of all, we'd have to have staff in order to make sure the room is prepared, to make appointments, to make sure that people get in when their appointments are there. And like I said, right now, we are less than one person at the front counter to be able to do all that. So
can it be facilitated by Zoom just like this has been? Would it make it easier?
I don't think it would make it easier. Okay. I spent 3 hours getting this room ready for Zoom today.
Fair enough.
Did you really?
3 hours?
Wow.
Be able to get this computer to log in this room and Zoom to function and finding a way to get all these peripherals
Yeah. Well, that's important for us to know, because that's a real...
Well, I mean, it's just when you think of conducting this meeting, and that review board should be simple, but it's having somebody to schedule all those appointments, to be here, to bring you materials and make sure all the materials are staged for you, and then get them back out to who they need to go to after it, when you have literally less than one person at the front counter to do it.
Well, question. Yes. It won't take 3 hours next time, because you know the process, right?
Unless he's sick again. Unless somebody else has to do it.
Nobody.
I'm assuming.
I mean, I'm assuming it won't.
Yeah.
But I'm also strongly advocating that, given that this room serves for public meetings, it would be nice to have a computer in here that was set up with all the... And I'm told that's going to happen. So... So I don't mean to complain.
No, I don't think you're complaining. It's kind of astonishing.
But it is. I mean, the review board, you do need to have at least one staff person, and more likely you would have the front counter person to cover appointments, and a planner as questions arise.
And I was asking you, there's not a lot of change in getting these vacancies filled.
We've gotten interviews completed on the code compliance position. The front office person, Liz, that left her position is, I think, closed or about to close. So we'll be interviewing for that shortly. So, I mean, we will start staffing up, but it's not a quick process.
But I think everyone around the table is expressing our appreciation, really, for you.
Yeah,
because this facilitates the conversation so much easier than if we're looking through our papers.
So, and state law now is that meetings have to be done hybrid, where you're making decisions. So advisory commissions don't, but this is the sort of meeting that we'll be seeing at planning commission and council now. We don't have a choice. We have to do it.
Now, who makes the decision when the building can be opened up again?
The city manager ultimately will make that decision when all the factors align.
And we're going into the flu season, so I'm not optimistic.
Well, yeah, we're going into flu season and staffing issues and everything else.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you all for your attention, and even got a date for the retreat. We can, if there's a motion to adjourn.
I would just like to make a suggestion that we do have one more meeting.
Yes,
before
we do,
then,
December.
If we could just look at a relative agenda for that.
Yes, I think that's a good idea. That's what I had in mind too. We can and then my hope would be that we could put some of the materials together for the meeting, so that you know what it is we're going to talk about, and we won't be starting. You'll have homework, so to speak. Okay. Any other information or?
Thank you, Derek, for all the
thank you.
And
So it looks somebody that
and thank
to put
you
up
all
in the
on the
middle. So you said there was
like
a process.
You can.
It was mandating for him to put up.
I don't think we have a motion to adjourn.
A motion to adjourn.
I just can adjourn.
I can check on it. Yeah, no urgence. I mean,
sure.
Yeah, because I need to get back to this guy because he was kind of losing his shit.
It seemed
really strange that all of a sudden there was.
I mean, awnings have always been weird, but because a lot of times they're being attached to the structure that they extend over the right of way, which is technically a right of way. I'm not sure at all. Because normally it would just be a sign permit, but there could be something building code wise.
This guy's owns a business and it's a bit for sure.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure it out for him. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I know. I'm going to work on it for next year.
You'll put me on the list for next year?
I definitely. For sure. I love it when people use it.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Derek.
Thank you very much. Bye. I don't know if Jeff Terry.
Can you hear me, Barbara?
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
I stopped
you.
My video. Sorry. I wanted to ask you a quick question. Did we say here? I think I got it. Did we say 9:30 on 9:30 on the 6th? Right.
9:30 to 12:30 on the 6th.
12:30 on the 6th.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
So
and then we're having a December meeting, right?
We probably will have a December meeting, I hope.
December 7th, I believe.
Yes, the first Wednesday. And so my hope is that we'll have some idea of what will be discussed in that retreat.
Yeah.
And then, Derek, are we having our...
will set up something, a new member orientation. I think Beverly had said she was hoping for the latter part of this month.
Yeah, I'm out of town again.
And hopefully I won't get sick again.
Yeah.
Okay, because I'd like to learn more about what you were talking about today. I was just a little lost.
Oh,
okay.
About what?
Oh, about the park, you know, the parking slots. And
all of that is very complicated. So I think we have to work, because we usually haven't discussed those broader issues here. And I think what we'll try to do is get a summary of the legislation and then discuss the impacts on the city. And as Derek was saying, he'll know the process of what the city has to do. So it's not like we're going to just discuss the potential impacts.
Okay.
Right?
I mean, yeah, and I think honestly, the discussion at this point would be good if it was